This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Viola. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Kara Manning. Kara, so usually our FUV Live Sessions are at our studio in the Bronx, but this is a little bit of a different setup. We got the chance to talk to Viola backstage at SOB's downtown in Manhattan ahead of her performance. You've chatted to her before. What was it like to catch up with her in the green room before this performance?
Well, it was great, too, because the last time I had spoken to her was during the pandemic.
That's right.
So we chatted remotely. And that had been around her 2021 album, Stand For Myself. And at the time, she was on EZI label. She has changed labels. She is now on S-Curve. And her new EP, My Way, is very much also a change for her, stepping back from the country and Americana that she's gotten known for and stepping back to her roots in dance. In London, she worked a lot with the broken beat group Bugs in the Attic, which was seminal for that genre of dance. She also worked with Massive Attack and Sub Focus. And My Way gives her a chance to sort of return and flex her muscles again in that arena where she feels really comfortable. It's a lustier, kind of different Viola than perhaps you have gotten used to if you were not aware of those early years of her in Britain. But as always, she is just such a compelling conversationalist.
Yeah.
And I just love her going 1,000 miles an hour on whatever subject she needs to talk about. She's just a wonderful human being, warm, effusive, smart about every topic that you throw her way. So it was just delightful to actually see her in person and have a conversation with her at SOB's.
And what are we going to hear first from this live performance at SOB's?
Well, she worked with her live band for that. We had a chance to watch that sound check a bit. We're going to start with My Way, live from SOB's on FUV Live Sessions.
Thank you.
I'm Karen Manning with FUV Live Sessions backstage with Yola at SOB's in Lower Manhattan, following her absolutely electrifying sound check for her set this evening. I mean, your sound check was brilliant even, Yola. You know, it was wonderful to watch you work on, you know, work out these new songs from the My Way EP.
It's been really fun. So I've not played out these songs a lot. I did give them a little test drive in March in here in New York and in DC.
Yeah.
But then I got distracted by a little thing called starring on Broadway,
which I want to talk to you about. You know, the last time we chatted during the pandemic, it was over Zoom on the release of Stand For Myself.
Yes.
And you could hear on that album a little bit of the segue that you're making now mm-hmm. on songs like Dancing Away and Tears.
Yes.
You also covered Soul to Soul.
Yes.
For Apple Music. But the leap here on tracks like Future Enemies or Temporary or Symphony just makes it clear that you're not doing something new. You're actually going back to something that you started mm-hmm. in Bugs in the Attic, which is one of the seminal groups of Broken Beat or Bruck.
Yes.
Tell me about why it was really important at this stage in your career to say, okay, I left that behind for a while, but now I really need to return to that, what I was doing. You know, you used to sing with Massive Attack. Mm-hmm. What you did with Bugs in the Attic was really important in UK music and a whole form of dance that existed, dance in house that existed in the late 90s and early 2000s.
It was really super important to me because Broken Beat is hybridized music. It fuses so much of music that I listen to all the time. Rare groove, soul music, funk music, Afrobeat, singular, the Fela Kuti type, and 80s soul in large proportions. There's a lot of that. And I was in Bugs in the Attic, and that record, we did an album called Back in the Doghouse. And there are songs on that record that stand up today as if they were made yesterday. I mean, that are really in the canon of the progressive R&B genre. If that's like how we would, like, there's an umbrella that captures Thundercats and Anderson .Paak and Steve Lacy's of the world, that sonically are profoundly different right. in all of their expressions, and Childish Gambino's and people like that. But under that umbrella, there is this kind of hybridized understanding of bringing, there's rock aesthetic and there's funk aesthetic and there's soul aesthetic. And they're mixing in multiple different expressions and multiple different, almost formulas of percentages of each, you know? And so that's what I was raised in that culture of hybridizing that kind of music, but I didn't get an out to do that until I got like my first proper audition for a job after finishing school, because we right. finished school and sixth form at like 19. And so that's one thing I felt like I was perpetually finding, I was always searching for. And then I got the job in Bugs and we toured the world for 3-4 years, and then I lost my voice, and that I had nodules and I couldn't speak for 2 months. I couldn't sing for a year and a half. It took me a long time to get myself back, and then by the time that I got myself back, the kind of era was over.
Because you were a songwriter and a singer for them, and you're also, am I wrong in that there's a grainy video, and I think it's yes. of you doing Yarborough and People's Don't Stop the Music with Bugs
yes.
and that is you
yes and that. We cover that in my so
oh,
for
wow.
the entirety of the Stand For Myself promo
yeah.
and when I first talked to you in 2021, we've been covering Don't Stop the Music in our live set the whole time until almost now. We played it at 2024. And so I've been giving not remotely subtle hints.
That you were coming back to
yeah, for 3 solid years. So what started happening was that, like, my label were like, no one's surprised. Why is no one surprised? And I'm like, because I've been giving everyone the cliff notes, and I talk in my shows. So no one was surprised. If you come to a live show,
yeah,
you're not surprised. If you follow me and you see how I post,
right,
you're not surprised. So the only people that were really, really super duper duper surprised were people that didn't really follow me and didn't come to any of my shows. And they highlighted who they were.
Well,
and I was like, that's really what I love about it. Because when I announced and I put out my first single from this EP, everyone was like, yeah, because they knew it was coming.
Right.
They knew it was coming.
You know, but then again, you know, you have always been somebody who has sort of like defined your own. You've been ferocious about setting your own parameters about
yes.
what you want and your voice. And
yes.
that you were going to be, you know, that you were not going to play the game of being something that you didn't want to be.
That part. Yes, you nailed it. Everything you just said. I'd spoken to people who had long made their mark and they'd spoken on their regrets. And a lot of it was to do with feeling limited, the ease with which you fall out of love when you're limited. I always knew that would be something for me. I always knew that would be something for me. And so finding people that could help me express this kind of music was always the mission.
You found Broken Sean Beat. Douglas and Zach Skelton.
Yes,
so
I did.
And you know, Sean has worked with Lizzo, Madonna. Zach has worked with John Legend and Demi Lovato, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about these two people that you felt, you know what, I can co-produce with them. They get what I want.
A level of skill that is extremely high, matched with a sense of ego that is very low.
Oh, their ego is low.
Yes.
So that your ego can bloom.
It's more that, so I'm not really big. I don't give that in the studio, you know? I really want the communion, you know? Like, I'm not a sub or a dom, not in the sack, not nowhere, you know? I'm really into partnership. I'm really into equals, evens of all the Stevens. And so they really get that. And as being in this body, my experience can be that people try and wear you like a skin suit.
Explain.
Like, I don't know if you saw Get Out.
Yeah.
They want to put me in the upside down.
Yeah.
And then ride me around like a prize for them pony. Can I swear? It's too late.
We're
beep
there.
Beep it, love. Beep me. I'm going to swear. So people, they can't help but do it. Sometimes they have an agenda and they have a brand that they have to get to the fore and they have to put their stamp on something. Sometimes it's just that they don't know how much they do that. They're not as slick collaborators. Sometimes it's just too much ego. Sometimes it's not enough ego. Sometimes it's insecurity masquerading as ego. But whatever the permutation of the not being a good partner is, it often stands in the way of collaborators across the board. I'd say obviously more so female collaborators and more so again black female collaborators. Everyone experiences that when people don't have that open spirit. So the thing that really drew me to those two is that, like, they were instantly curious.
Mm.
They were like, so cool. Like, what do you want to do? Like, do you have anything started? Do you want to come in fresh with something? I had voice notes that are just like insane, right?
So did you have these songs then? Because you did this where Leon Bridges often works. You recorded at Gold Diggers. So did you come in with these songs? Because a lot of them feel like you're saying something with the My Way EP.
I really am.
You really are. You know, ostensibly it could be about romance, but for me it was about like anthemic about what you deal with as a woman with gaslighting, with
yes.
betrayal.
Yes.
There is one song, Symphony, that seems to reach for joy, but the others are really quite determined about, well, maybe reaches for joy.
Yeah,
tentatively.
It's even the sad ones are about reaching for joy, but it's about how to dodge the things
right.
to reach for joy.
Right.
And so, like, Symphony is very much a finally song. It's very much like, I'm finally in spaces where I'm encountering people, and in this particular sense, someone romantic, my partner, no less, and. Someone who is both in a deep emotional connection and deep sexual connection and deep all the other creative intellectual connections, all the different connections. And I've found it very easy to find pretty stupid people. I found it very easy to find people who are like profoundly unsexual but intellectually fantastic, and people that, you know, then are wonderfully incompatible in tertiary ways. And so, like, when I met my partner, I was like, I think we've done this. I think we nailed it. And so, like, it's one of those moments. So even in the, it feels very like a sexy song because of the bass line, but you listen to the lyrics and it's very like, there's a suggestion of, we've been through the mill a bit and we might have just nailed it.
This is Yola on FUV Live Sessions with Symphony. Tara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Symphony Live at SOBs, recorded in November. I am here backstage with Yola. She has just finished her sound check. So we're playing with time a little bit. You know, we're talking before the set that we just heard. How do you, you know, Ready, which jumped out at me as being a really incredible track. There's a line that it has so many layers, but the lyrics that really jumped out at me serve almost as an ultimatum. When they said, if you don't like it, leave. I like that. That's cool, but I'm taking all my stuff. But that seems, you know, I love you're clever, because a lot of what you write about and a lot of what you sing about and a lot of who you are is, again, you can be very specific about an event, yet there's a universality about what you're saying.
I live in the both.
At the time that we're speaking in November, after an election, the My Way EP might be on repeat a lot of us.
I infuriatingly write prophetic songs. It's terrifying.
When did these songs come about?
So I'm over. I voice note randomly over like the years, and I just collect them for then when I'm next ready. So like I'd have to look at the date on the voice note, like when. So like, and sometimes it's me just singing like a bass line. So like for Future Enemies, I'm going a-ba-ba-ba-ba-bum. And I know what I mean. And then I've got to play that note. So part of like the Zach and Sean thing is that they understood the craziness of my voice notes, and they didn't give me any judgy energy for how random, like they were in my brain enough. And that's a kind of compatibility that you rarely get. Similarly with me and finding my boyfriend, is that like a very rare, I sing for 11 years. Like, so like that was a long, long ride. and so I really do try and pay homage to like rare kind of connections of every permutation. And so yeah, Ready is really relevant right now. It feels very Mass Deportation-y in a really scary way. At the same time, for me, it was specific in I was talking about two instances at the same time. I was talking about Windrush. And a lot of people don't know about Windrush, but you know, my mum came from Barbados to the UK because they were like, we lost loads of people in World War II. We need loads of people to stack all the kind of civil services, make sure the country keeps running. Europe needed to do that en masse. And so they shipped people from the colonies to the UK to work, to save everyone. And so she went into the National Health Service and worked for it for 30 years. And then they lost her records miraculously in a magical fire that there was no record of in the fire department. I know, because she was in legal proceedings when she died. And they lost her records and then denied her her superannuation pension, which was supposed to be the bumped up pension that you're supposed to get. And miraculously enough, they only lost the black and brown records. And so it was really like an epidemic thing. But because our kind of resident black population is a far smaller percentage than here in America, and younger in that we came over later in history, that therefore means that this idea of, and we didn't have segregation, and that's another thing. And so that sense of like completely unified community speaking and finding out that everyone else is having the same problems, and then like galvanizing in a certain way, it's like cultures need time to kind of galvanize like that kind of consensus and talk about it. And so when I was growing up, people would tell me, go back to where you came from. I'm like, bro, I wasn't born in Barbados, but like, you're telling me to go and sit on a beach in Barbados? Fly me. Yesterday. Are you high? It's a dope idea. And if someone told me now, go back to Ghana, and I didn't grow up with my father, but that's the other side of my family, I'd be like, send me in December. If you don't know what goes on in Ghana, in Accra in December, then you don't need to know. I don't want to tell you. Like,
as somebody though who has experienced the Windrush scandal firsthand, and what happened with your mom, when you are you still based out of Nashville?
I'm in a number of places. I'm a rolling stone. I've just come back from London, and so I spend time in London.
Yeah.
I spend time in Nashville, and I spend time in New York, and so I am literally astride constantly.
Do you see that in some ways my way? The EP can sort of open the door back to you also for really dipping really strongly back into the UK dance scene and UK electronic.
To a degree, yeah. Yes. I think I want to tell the story of Broken Beat a lot more. It felt like the last era of Tales of the Tour Bus level anecdotes. Because after that, it felt like just the nature of signings and the nature of artists really, I think especially in the UK, they really clipped away at Job Seekers Allowance. And like the biggest bands from way back in history, right up until like, I suppose like Massive Attack and people like, we all came up on benefits. And even before that, university used to be free. And so like, there was so much of the history of like, why was the music so good coming out of such a teeny tiny island, not much bigger than freaking Oregon. Like, it's because the welfare state allowed everyone to have the same privilege as a trust fund kid has now. And so you think of all the bands that you hold in the highest regard. They're working class. You need to reckon with the fact.
The whole Manchester scene was based on that, too.
It was,
you know, everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. A question for you is that you just completed in October your run in Hadestown, in which you played Persephone.
Yes.
You were a goddess.
Uh-huh.
In all ways. But you were a goddess of the underworld. And and I'm wondering what that experience is, because being in theater and having that regimen, it is brutal.
Very.
It is brutal. And I'm wondering how that's affected your performance now going on tour and how you sort of reckon with what the differences between what it meant to be in theater and then how you are presentational on stage.
I feel like theater, it gives you a real like schooling in being present. There is a certain volume, especially as a touring musician, that you learn to check out, to conserve your energy, to then check back in. And you can't do that for a moment because people are watching, because you're still on stage and people are, even if you're not, it's not your song at that time, you are doing some form of choreography. You're moving to an essential part of the stage and the stage moves. So you better be on the right spot, because when it rotates, you need to be in the right spot, or you're going up and down some stairs because there's a spiral staircase on stage, or it's going up and down by a floor because like it will take you down into the basement of the building.
A friend of mine described being in a musical, especially a musical, as like you're on a roller coaster.
Yes.
You can't stop it. You have to go through the entire roller coaster ride.
You do.
You can't get off. You can't make one wrong move. Otherwise, you're going to fall out.
You're going to fall out off the top of a roller coaster and hit the deck in the most brutal way.
Yeah.
And people, loads of Persephones came out with injuries.
Were you okay?
I got out just before.
You got out before the injury.
Yeah, I had tendonitis. And so, but I managed to not, I was thinking I was going to snap a tendon and that was going to be a year recovery. And so I was really like being very cautious my last shows. But like, I took all the precautions day one. I was like, I have got no trust. Like I'm the girl that takes the precautions early. I'm the person that freaking had her visa interview on election day, because I was like, I don't have trust. You'd be kidding me. Yeah. I'm going to be prepared. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, I was like knee straps, ankle straps, arch support, freaking you name it, everything, day one. I'm like, you're not going to get me.
Would you do theater again?
I tell you, as a side and aside to that, it's the best boot camp ever. Like, I lost 10 inches around my waist in 6 weeks. There ain't nothing. Because of the roller coaster, you can't stop. It's like impossible to stop. So you, like the first month I couldn't walk. I had to basically, I could shuffle from my apartment to the elevator to the car, and then the car to stage door. And then I had to save every step for stage. Because if I used one more step, I wouldn't be able to finish the performance.
Well, you were...
So it's so hardcore.
You were extraordinary in Hadestown, and you were extraordinary in Elvis as well. And I do hope that you really do have that opportunity and that yen to sort of do more acting, because it comes naturally to you. You are quite powerful.
It's really fun. And I think there's loads of different ways to skin this acting cat. And so I think maybe I should finally lean into my strong suit, which is comedy. Because everyone that's been to a show, and I'm in New York, and loads of New Yorkers have been to my show, all right. I know I've got a, and I was told by Nicole Byer, she came to my LA show and she was like, you know, you do stand up, right? Am I doing it? Is that what I'm doing? She's like, yeah. And so I've been told by multiple people that I do stand up.
And what comedians do you admire?
Nicole is one of my heroes, like up there. Matteo Lane, love. Charlie Brooker.
Oh, well, yeah.
And we're living, but a lot of people don't know. They know what Charlie Brooker has done.
They know Black Mirror.
Yeah, but they don't know
how funny. Yeah,
how funny. Hilarious. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Hilarious. It hurts my face how hilarious Charlie Brooker is. And Charlie Brooker's done the very Charlie Brooker thing of being very much, you don't know my face. I'm sorry for even mentioning your name, Charlie. but I love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
I love how you will jump headlong into something that could terrify somebody and might terrify you, but you will take that chance and do it anyway.
I'm an immigrant. To leave everything you've ever known and thrust yourself into something completely foreign requires a certain amount of gumption. It requires a certain amount of will to do and will to work. And so in an environment where people are questioning the validity of immigrants and our will to work and our will to do, you could never, you ain't got it. Most of you ain't got it. And I know, because I talk to people who are just like, I could never do what you did. And I did it working class. Most of the people that you get from the UK nowadays are trust fund kids. It's what, you know, you've got people, you know, didn't come from that system, but it's because it's so expensive to do music. It's so expensive to get your 10,000 hours, you know? And so, like, coming over here with what I managed to get from my mother when she passed and, you know, the will, and betting it all on Black, aka my Black ass, is something that people would normally just put that into a home and play safe. But I was like, I've got no one and nothing other than this pile. And I wrote some songs that did well. And so I bundled it together. I wrote a business plan and I effectuated that to coming here. And the number of times in the UK I was asked, how did you do that? We tried to break first fund kids and not all of them are broken. So how did you do that with nothing and no one? And I'm like, some strategy. And also being insanely prepared for all the, okay, I'll give you one not swear, effery. That was going to befall me. Like I had to pre-see patriarchy and how they're going to try and find the nearest white savior narrative to string me to. And so I did a little EP. I wrote it, produced it, mixed it, mastered it. Obviously with mixing engineer, with a master engineer, of course. But I'm in all of every stage of it. So that when everyone was looking for someone to thank, they could only thank me. And you could see some people desperate to try and find the nearest white guy. And I was like, I'm sorry, Buki. They'd say, I love this about it, in thinking that they must be talking about like a white guy. I'm like, I'm so sorry again. That was also me. It's going to really break your heart, this one. You know, the mastering, you realize, yeah, that was also me. I'm so sorry. But I was there. Like, you know, it was like, Sean, Optimum, great job. But we were deep in the process. And so from the beginning, it's been this narrative of my way has been a narrative the entire time of trying to negotiate my way around people's cognitive bias enough to allow me some semblance of freedom until I could get my actual freedom.
It just does appeal that you did play a goddess in Hadestown. And if you indeed were a goddess, if
Persephone
you could be
kind
a goddess,
of has to do the same.
Yeah, exactly.
She has to really try and navigate around because she's a goddess of the underworld, but she's also the goddess of nature and of life.
Right.
And so her first title isn't goddess of the underworld. Her first title is goddess of nature and life. And
what would you be goddess of in your estimation right now as Yola 2025?
Goddess of agency. I'd be the goddess of agency. I'd be like this isn't Get Out, Buki. You're not wearing me like a skin suit. You're not riding me around so you can live vicariously through my skill set. That's not happening, not now, not never, again. I spent many, many, many years being someone's tool. And sometimes with this voice, sounding English, my voice reminds some people of their ancestors. And so they'll think, oh, great, you're culturally identical to me. And I'm not, no. I told you I was an immigrant and I was a child of immigrants. I'm not culturally similar at all. And that is always the thing that makes that skin suit experience challenging, is the assumption that because of the sound of my voice, that I must have all the same cultural inputs and therefore the cultural whims and the cultural influences and direction. I'm like, no, my life is different. I'm a child of a Bajan, child of a Ghanaian. I was raised by a black woman. I'm not just physically black. And we need to understand the difference of that. I'm culturally black. And that means that to understand my lens, you're going to have to step out of your sense of comfort or sense of familiarity. Comfort can be achieved, but you're going to have to step outside of your sense of centering your own lens. And that's something that, like, I feel like I perpetually try and champion, both in being genre fluid and in the roles that I take, like playing Sister Rosetta Tharpe in the Elvis movie. We want to speak on agency, talk about it. Everything I try and manifest is to do with a sense of agency.
It does lead us to the title track of My Way.
It does.
It does indeed. And talk to me about My Way, because you've taken what is basically a song that does have, everyone thinks of Sinatra or
yes.
Mel Torme, or, you know, and mm-hmm. you have taken it for yourself. Tell me about why you seized upon that title and making it a Yola song.
I think I took it because it was time. I've spoken a lot on the skin suit experience. Mm. I've been ridden like a prize pony multiple ways, and not in a fun way, may I add. Wink, wink. And as a result, I was just exhausted. I took time out because I was just exhausted from fighting for my agency, or fighting to have a voice, and fighting to have this sense of free expression, or having to mind game somebody into having a good time. That's really what that song's about. It's about having to play intricate mind games with people just so that they could enjoy themselves, because they didn't know they're blocking their blessings and standing in the way of both their and my enjoyment.
Do you feel as if your mental health is now better that you have made these shifts by far? Yeah.
Infinitely.
Infinitely.
I am now in spaces that don't assume that I center whiteness. And I'm not experiencing situations where people are cherry picking the most culturally white centering of black people they know to lift aloft. I'm finding people who are of every background and every hue, but that are drawn to people who center in many different ways. And as a result of that, my life is more technicolor.
Yola, thank you so much. What a privilege to talk to you again.
It's always a joy.
We adore you. The new EP is My Way. It is out now. Thank you so much. That was Yola on FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Yola for sitting down with us before her performance at SOBs in Manhattan. Thanks to S-Curve Records and SOBs for sharing live audio from Yola's performance with us for this session. Our associate producer for this episode was Catherine Sherman. Megan Suma is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.